Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review, who is also the author of The Weed Agency. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you as usual. But we begin with Jim's brief recap of his trip out to be on HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher, which I'm sure was a very inviting format for you, Jim.
If you had said to me, someday you'll be on a stage with Bill Maher, Anthony Weiner, Nicole Wallace, Ralph Reed, and the filmmaker John Waters. That is about as weird a crew as you can possibly imagine. For those wondering, I did not interact with Anthony Weiner that much, so I couldn't give you much feedback, positive or negative, kind of the way I liked it. John Waters was kind of the surprise of the evening. I haven't seen any of his films other than maybe Catching Crybaby on cable. He's definitely always been kind of an out there guy, the kind of guy that David Lynch would say, well, that's a little weird, okay? But he's a really charming, wonderful guy, and you know, a pleasant surprise to both chat with. And he said the last time he had been on Maher's program, he had met Andrew Breitbart, and they had hit it off very well. And he was, you know, so shocked and horrified when he died. So John Waters is a really pleasant human being who I could easily spend a lot of time with. People who watched it, I'll understand if you want a refund. I thought I did not do particularly well. Everyone is telling me I did fine, so either my assessment of myself is off or everyone's just being nice to me. I think I will just kind of say that it is a very different experience than your average political chat show. And there's a reason some conservatives are wary or not fans of Bill Maher. And, you know, the program is what it is. But it was kind of them to invite me on. Hopefully I did not fall flat on my face, and, you know, life will go on. And a lot of people who are not impressed with anything else that I've ever done in my life were really wowed by the fact that I was a Bill Maher. So, as Bill Murray would say, so we've got that working for us.
Well, you accomplished several things here. First of all, you got attention for the book and the work you do at National Review. Secondly, the first attack from Bill Maher was that he just simply didn't believe anything that was published in the Washington Times. So.
Yeah, if you look closely at my eyes at that moment, it's like, oh, this is how it's going to go, huh? Okay.
So the other thing is you got Anthony Weiner to admit there should be no limit to a minimum wage.
Yeah, there is. He doesn't believe at any point a minimum wage hurts job growth. So we could raise it to $100. We could raise it to $200 an hour. I described it in the Morning Jolt as like, this is a studio audience that adores Bill. It's his show, and they're not there to see me. They're not there to. They're not fans of me. They're not likely to agree with anything I say. So if I can get them to question anything they believe, then I'm ahead of the game. And I don't think I did that very much, but this may have been a sealed door from the beginning. So.
Yeah, I don't think they were interested in intellectual discussion. And as you mentioned earlier, you're probably not getting any selfies from Anthony Weiner. So that's a win in every way. So anyway, on to the actual three martinis today. Good news from some recent Senate polls, two from Iowa, as well as a series from SurveyUSA in Georgia, where the Republicans still have their runoff next month. Joni Ernst, just last week, won very convincingly the Republican nomination for Senate. And already in a Rasmussen survey, she's up on Congressman Bruce Braley, 45-44. And in a Loras College poll, which I have to admit I've never heard of before, but still she's up 6, 48-42. Over in Georgia, looks like Kingston's the favorite to win the Republican runoff. Either way, he's got a 6-point lead on Michelle Nunn. David Perdue has a 5-point lead, and Michelle Nunn's below 40% in both of those. Those are looking pretty good in both ways.
Pleasant surprises in both of those. Democrats have been very high on Michelle Nunn. At least at this point, the polling suggests that they're being too optimistic about her chances. And in Iowa, that really was kind of the more pleasant one. Look, Ernst undoubtedly is a good candidate. When you win nearly half the vote in a crowded primary, that's a very good sign. We all know the famous, I'm Joni Ernst, and I used to castrate hogs, grabbing the attention of the viewer from the very first seconds TV ad she did. Iowa had been a state I had not put in my, okay, Republicans have a good shot here pile yet. So seeing her ahead in two polls is a nice little indicator here to indicate, yes, this should be competitive. She's got a good shot, and she's got a like, good charisma, very good on the stump. We all know Bruce Braley hates farmers, and that's not necessarily the demographic you want to alienate in Iowa. So there's good potential here. We'll have to see how it continues as the summer goes on.
On to the bad martini now, and if you don't enjoy a lot of media coverage and softball questions to Hillary Clinton, you'll probably want to stay away from the mainstream networks over the next several days and maybe even weeks. Her book is out either this week or soon. If you want answers on Benghazi, you're more likely to get them in the Weed Agency, even though Jim doesn't even address it in the Weed Agency. But nonetheless, we'll be talking about that. The issue we're going to talk about today is this excerpt from her interview with ABC's Diane Sawyer. Sawyer talks about the exorbitant amount of money that she and Bill Clinton charge for giving speeches.
It has been reported you've made $5 million making speeches. The president's made more than $100 million.
Well, if you have no reason to remember, but we came out of the White House not only dead broke, but in debt. We struggled to, you know, piece together the resources for mortgages, for houses, for Chelsea's education. You know, it was not easy.
Jim, as you pointed out, she was a senator at the time, so that's not exactly Trump change. Bill Clinton gets a pension, I assume. Obviously, they had plenty of money coming in. They did have a bunch of legal issues and other things to sort out, and they weren't filthy rich coming into the White House. This story of living in a shanty somewhere doesn't exactly hold up.
First of all, the wording of that, we struggle to cobble together the resources, struggle to piece together the resources, like it's a puzzle piece for mortgages, for houses, plural. She had a perfectly good answer here, which is, you know, Diane, we had the opportunity to make money and we took it. And there's no shame in that. And there shouldn't be any shame in that. It's very tough for a woman who left along in September 2012 was running around saying there are rich people everywhere and yet they do not contribute to the growth of their own economies. In Hillary Clinton's mind, she's not rich. Now, she's talking about this when we left the White House. She was in negotiations with Simon & Schuster to write a book at that point. And in December of 2000, as you said, she'd just been elected to the Senate. She knew what she was doing. She wasn't facing unemployment. She got an $8 million advance for her book, the book she wrote, Living History, back then. The idea that, oh, where are we going to get money from? It's just flat not true. Like, she had $8 million. I don't know how much of it was being paid upon signing and how much was paid, but a good chunk of that comes to the author when they sign the contract. So the idea, oh, how are we going to pay? It was kind of ridiculous. I think this is what isolates a good portion of what people really can't stand about Hillary, is that she will lie even when she doesn't have to. And she will do it to make her appear to be something she isn't. She is not middle class. She is not struggling. She has not known economic hardship from the moment Bill Clinton went into the governor's office. I just want to point out, Greg, that you said, yes, the book comes out and she'll be doing a lot of promotional events here. I would just like for the duration of the next couple of weeks for us to call it that other book that's out. Because I feel pretty good about my PR tour. It may not be quite as big as hers, though. I got to admit. I think probably come up second in terms of sheer scope and hype of all that stuff.
All right. On to the crazy martini now. And John Kerry said over the weekend that we really shouldn't worry that much about the five Taliban figures released from Guantanamo, even though they have pretty much free reign to do whatever they want, go wherever they want in Qatar. And then, of course, a year from now, they can literally leave the country and go and do whatever they want. And he says, we have ways of making sure that they don't do that. And if they do, we've got ways of dealing with it very swiftly and very powerfully. Dianne Feinstein of California, senator, is chairwoman of the Senate Intelligence Committee. And Bob Schieffer asked her to respond to what John Kerry said. And when she did, Schieffer said that she didn't sound quite as confident about the outcome here as Kerry, and here was her response.
Well, it's hard to be comfortable when you really haven't briefed on the intricacies of carrying out this agreement.
Keep in mind, again, she's the chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee. And then Schieffer said, well, I talked to some people at the White House, and they say when it comes to these ongoing operations like this, we never brief the Senate. Here's what she said to that.
Well, that isn't necessarily true. We have been briefed, the chairman and the ranking member. Senator Chambliss and I have been briefed on operations underway, but at least you have some knowledge and you can make some comment. That's never been the case with this particular situation, so it hits us as a real surprise.
Jim, Dianne Feinstein usually keeps a pretty measured tone. For her to be saying this about her own party tells you she's pretty furious about this.
This is why I nominated for the crazy martini. Let's assume that you're somebody part of the Obama brain trust. And I can hear everyone scoffing upon you, that phrase right there. But let's say you're Susan Rice or somebody involved in this, and you know that you're going to make a controversial move in this trade. Wouldn't you want to bring in Dianne Feinstein early as possible, get her on board, play to her ego, do all of that stuff? Because she has been critical of this administration in the past, but I think most of us on the right would say not the way we are. She's hardly been a vociferous and relentless critic of the administration. All of her criticism is more in a tone of sorrow than in anger, an expression of this. Freezing her out on this completely probably is a very bad strategy on their part. And here's the next thing, which is that if you're Obama or you're, you know, one of his top trusted advisors in this area, why wouldn't you kind of look at that and say, well, wait a minute, if Dianne Feinstein is utterly convinced this is a bad idea, as is Leon Panetta, as is Hillary Clinton, as is James Clapper, at least, you know, until recently, as did Robert Gates, maybe it really is a bad idea. all these people have pretty much spent their lives either in defense or intelligence or something like that. But Obama, the community organizer, is totally convinced this is going to work. And I think that that's one of the things that's really unnerving about this. You got to look far and wide to find somebody in the national security arena who looks at this deal and says, yes, this is going to work out great for us. We can totally trust the Qataris. These guys are never going back to Afghanistan. If they do, it's not going to be important and everything's going to be hunky-dory. So you know, there you go. There's kind of this sense of like this administration is so closed off that they don't even listen to Dianne Feinstein. Dianne Feinstein is the outsider conservative critic in their mind.
I guess so.
And you know, that's about as good a crazy martini nomination as I think you can come up with these days.
Exactly. And, you know, the argument from the White House is, well, we did brief you on that in 2011 and 2012. We just haven't talked about it in the last couple of years, in which at that point, Dianne Feinstein or Saxby Chambliss could bust out their best Tommy Vitor.
And, dude,
that was like two years ago. Anyway, as we mentioned, yesterday's a primary day in Virginia. It's kind of fun because we got this Jim Moran district, which unfortunately is going to stay in Democratic hands. And you got all these Democrats trying to outleft each other on guns and Obamacare, how much they love it. It's just a complete vacation from the rest of the country.
If you wanted to design a district and an ad campaign designed to drive conservatives crazy, this is pretty much what you would come up with. It basically is, you know, no, I'm more progressive. No, I'm more progressive. I pledge to hunt down the Koch brothers with dogs, you know, that kind of tone to this campaign. And, you know, because like the Koch brothers live like several states away. Anyway, so yeah, so somebody gets to go on. We on the Republican side have a very good candidate in Micah Edmund, and I'm pulling for him. We'll see how it shakes out. Obviously, it's a tough district. So I guess if you're a Democrat in this district, good luck tomorrow. I think it'll be split 8 or 9 ways, and I'm hoping that it'll just be – it didn't get nearly as nasty as I hoped because I love to see Democrats fighting with other Democrats. But hopefully there'll be a lot of lingering resentment divisions that last all the way into November.
It's been fun to listen to, especially if you don't actually live in that district. Jim does, unfortunately, so he's got to deal with that. But anyway, Jim, we'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a good one.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please be sure to join us again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.